House Democrats have what advocates call the most significant gun control measures in more than two decades. Congressman Rodney Davis voted against both. The Taylorville Republican is pushing his own legislation, calling the Mass Violence Prevention Act, which has yet to pick up any Democratic co-sponsors. Davis tells GLT's Ryan Denham the Democratic bills now on their way to the Senate are window dressing and a distraction.
Lawmakers want to come in and introduce new laws when, in many cases, it was the laws that are on the books that many on the ground didn't follow. This bill, the Mass Violence Prevention Act, we believe will actually finally have a true impact because it's about communication, Ryan. When you look at Parkland, the sheer fact that the FBI tip line was called about a specific person offering specific threats to a specific school, and that FBI tip line did not forward that information anywhere. We use what we call fusion centers here in the state of Illinois and nationwide to address terrorism. We use them to address disaster assistance. We want to set up a national fusion center that could have been the focal point where information comes in, and it could have stopped a Nicholas Cruz who was blatant about what he wanted to do, but no one reacted to ensure that that was stopped. And also the fact that the Aurora shooter was a convicted felon. He purchased a firearm after erroneously getting a FOID card here in Illinois and then was stopped when he tried to get a concealed carry license. But there was no follow-up because there was no talking, there was no discussion state to state of what else this person who now had his FOID card taken away, what firearm did he or she possess, and then how can you go get it? That communication is what matters most and could have, in my opinion, stopped. We also need to prosecute criminals who use firearms when they commit a crime. These are the things that I don't believe are on the books, or they're not being used as well because we don't have enough assistant U.S. attorneys to take those crimes to court and prosecute them for using firearms when they commit a crime. Those are the types of things that the MVP Act will address, and that's why I'm a proud co-sponsor of it.
Well, that is mass violence. What about some of the everyday gun violence? I think some of these provisions of this bill might impact kind of the everyday gun violence that even communities like Bloomington Normal have begun to see. Last year, we had nine fatal shootings here in Bloomington Normal, which is like up from zero or one is our usual average for that. What provisions of those or others in the bill would trickle down to that kind of everyday gun violence outside of a mass shooting context?
Local law enforcement will tell you the best thing they have to prevent crimes and prevent violence is communication. And when we have a funnel of communication on a nationwide basis, that's going to allow our local law enforcement officials to have the best information to make the best decisions on the ground right here in Bloomington Normal. These are ideas that come from local law enforcement officials. That fusion center was local law enforcement driven years ago when it came to the Joint Terrorism Task Forces, and this is one that should be local law enforcement led too.
Last week, the House passed a couple of bills aimed at broadening the federal background check system for gun purchases. So one would give the FBI more time to do background checks on gun purchases. The other one extends the checks to private firearm sales. You had voted against both of those bills, and why'd you do that?
Because I don't think they would have done a darn thing to stop the mass shootings that we've seen in this country. I think the only people that would have been affected by these two bills would have been law-abiding citizens, not criminals who flout the federal firearms process, not criminals who already flout the existing background check process. We've got to have law enforcement officials at every level enforcing the laws that we have. That wasn't done in Parkland. When an FBI tip line is called and specific details about a prospective crime and prospective shooting is given to the FBI tip line with names, addresses, and where the threats are being made, and nothing is done, how many more laws do we need for them not to actually enforce? Until then, putting more extensive bureaucratic procedures with no caps on what could be charged to law-abiding citizens is not something that I think's the best legislative route.
Yeah, and so at least one of these bills would not have stopped a Nicholas Cruz from what he did. As you said, a pretty complete failure of law enforcement in that situation. However, the companion bill, the other one, is actually named after the Charleston shooting with the shooter named Dylan Roof. People call it the Charleston loophole bill, kind of a shorthand for it. I guess what's the harm in passing a bill that would extend the amount of time that law enforcement has to work a background check from 3 days up to 10 days. I guess what is the harm of that? Even if it doesn't stop a Nicholas Cruz shooting, couldn't it stop some other shooting? I mean, why can't we do multiple things at once?
Well, I think basically what these two bills are saying is that existing laws that most law enforcement officials say are working well, it may not be working. But I think it's also a distraction from the root causes and the root solutions of how we address mass violence and how we address gun crimes. Let's make sure that our law enforcement officials are on the ground ensuring that no more Nicholas Cruzes or Dylan Roofs or anyone gets access to firearms. We've done a lot in Washington already. We've closed loopholes in the National Instant Criminal Background Check system just in the last Congress. We've made sure that we actually address the mental health crisis, which is a large contributor to violence in this country right now, because we changed the law and it allows families and educators and law enforcement to get engaged when they see an individual getting to the stage 4 crisis stage. These are issues that none of those organizations or groups could have addressed in the past. We are trying to address the root causes of problems, and clearly the existing system, after we fix some of the loopholes in the last Congress, is not the problem right now.
This bill that you support, the Mass Violence Prevention Act, would use so-called fusion centers to stop mass shootings. It aims for more proactive information sharing and coordination among local, state, and federal law enforcement. But isn't a fusion center only as strong or as useful as the information being fused, the background checks themselves? Couldn't your bill and more robust background checks kind of work hand in hand to make a better system overall?
Well, you're assuming that the piece of legislation would have actually led to further background instructions, further background checks. No. It's just given the bureaucracy more days to do what they're doing now in a lot less time than even 3 days. That's why we have the National Instant Background Check System. It's exactly why, as I said earlier, these two bills, the only people it's going to affect are law-abiding citizens who are actually following the law. Criminals, potential murderers, people who are mentally ill, they don't care about following the law or how long a background check takes. They care about committing their crime. Law-abiding citizens, which are the overwhelming number of law-abiding gun owners in this country, are the ones who are going to be affected by this. So don't get caught up in the window dressing of what a bill sounds like or what it's named for, because the devil's in the details, and the details clearly show the problems we've seen in this country of addressing mass violence have been through a lack of enforcing the existing laws that are in place rather than a clamoring for new laws.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham here with Congressman Rodney Davis. So, Congressman, let's pivot and talk ethics and election law. Democrats in the House are pushing H.R. 1, this big bill touching on 4 political hot zones, voting, political money, redistricting ethics. You're the top Republican on the House Administration Committee, which marked up the bill last week. What do you think of this thing?
This bill is touted as ethics reform. Clearly, it's not that. What this bill is, it truly begins a process of taking billions of taxpayer dollars and putting them into the campaign coffers of candidates like me.
You're referring here to a new matching fund program in the bill that would support House candidates who agree to raise only small dollar contributions.
If you look at this bill, if it would have been implemented in my last race, $6 million taxpayer dollars would have come to me and my opponent because of this small dollar taxpayer match program that some Democrat in Washington concocted as a good idea to capitalize on what Act Blue was doing for candidates on the Democratic side throughout the nation. This is absurd to think that this is election reform and that this is ethics reform. This bill is only about enriching the Democratic candidates for Congress coffers, and they're also jamming this bill through. It's a 571-page bill. And as you mentioned, I'm the top Republican on the only committee that marked this bill up, when there's other committees of jurisdiction on this bill, too. And you know how much time I had to question individuals and outside special interest groups who the Democrats actually touted as helping them write the bill? I had 15 minutes of Q&A. That's it. 15 minutes. Democrats promised transparency. They promised openness. They promised that we, as Republicans, would have a chance to help write these bills. And I offered 28 amendments, and every single one of them, Every one of them was voted down on a party line vote during this 5-hour markup. It's not enough time. It's not what Democrats promised. And it's a travesty that this is the bill that they used as H.R. 1, which means it's their top priority.
It's tough to carve this up because it's not like an a la carte thing. They're running this bill as a whole package of things. There is a part of the bill that I was curious what you thought of it, because it does kind of relate to an issue that we face in Illinois here. So this H.R. 1 bill, this we've talked about, kind of it's a very broad thing. One of the many provisions of it would require states to adopt these independent commissions for drawing congressional boundaries. In Illinois, Republicans have normally come out on the losing end of redistricting fights in Illinois because it's a democratically controlled legislature. If there's a Democratic governor at the right time, it's generally Democrats get to pick the political maps. What did you think of that part of the bill? I mean, if it was possible to carve out a part of the bill a la carte style and deliver it as a single vote, what do you think of something like that?
I love it. That's why I'm fighting so hard for it right now here in Illinois, and have been. And I think if Bruce Rauner wants a legacy of success, that he'll continue to help us fight for redistricting reform. That's the only way for fairness in Illinois. The Democrats now have the governorship. They have super majorities in the House and the Senate. They have no incentive to work with Republicans on redistricting. They will draw their maps at will to protect their Democratic incumbents and protect the leadership of both the House and the Senate, Mike Madigan and John Cullerton, in perpetuity. And that's going to happen in less than 2 years when they begin that redistricting process. But Illinois' redistricting process is so flawed anyway that even if there is balance, let's say Bruce Rauner would have won, no, there would have been no compromise. Because the solution for no compromise in the Illinois Constitution for redistricting, which also affects us in Congress, because the state legislators draw our maps too. But the solution for no compromise in the Illinois Constitution, when you have Republicans and Democrats in divided government, is to draw a name out of a hat to see who gets the edge. Who wouldn't want to take a 50-50 shot to control the whole process? That's why we need a constitutional amendment in Illinois. A constitutional amendment can change the way redistricting happens. And I'm on record saying I support redistricting reform, that similar proposals that have been proposed in H.R. 1. But I cannot accept redistricting reform in Illinois, which could be said that, you know, we're protecting ourselves with redistricting reform as elected officials. I cannot do that and at the same time expect the taxpayers to spend millions of dollars in districts like mine to give to congressional campaigns.
I want to pivot here to an interview that you gave recently to a TV station, and you talked about how a recent conversation with Congressman Adam Kinzinger, actually a Bloomington Normal native, an ISU grad, how that conversation actually changed your mind on the president's national emergency declaration at the U.S.-Mexico border. You had concerns about the declaration, but then talked to Kinzinger after he got back from his National Guard duty on the border, and you both kind of changed your mind on this thing. Can you talk about that conversation with Congressman Kinzinger and how that happened?
Absolutely. Look, Adam and I have been friends since before he decided to run for office. There's nobody who really espouses the Republican conservative message as well as my friend Adam does. And I think one day we're all going to be campaigning for him in the state of Iowa, the state of New Hampshire. He's that good of a messenger, and he's that good of a member of Congress, and I'm very proud of him. So I take when Adam says that he's changed his mind on an issue, that makes me perk up. And I was dead set, ready to vote against the president's emergency declaration. But at the same time, Adam was serving his Air Guard duty as part of the Wisconsin National Guard, Wisconsin Air Guard. He was serving it on the Arizona border, the Texas border. And Adam told me what he saw on that border. And when he's there patrolling that border, he's seen groups upon groups taking advantage of no border structure, taking advantage of the poor system that we have and the lack of border patrol agents we have to police the border. And he's participating in these roundups of individuals trying to break the law. And he saw from the air the different groups here, and then another one over in this part of the border between our countries, and another one in this part. And he saw Border Patrol going from point A to point B and not ever getting a chance to stop the porous entry of people who are breaking our laws. And Adam told me, he said, you know what? It helped me change my mind. And he said he would be voting to keep the emergency declaration. And Adam's not been the most supportive of our president over the last few years on every issue. So when Adam says this is a good idea, when the people on the border with Border Patrol say this is a good idea, it changed my mind, and I voted to make sure that the president had the ability to do it because of Adam Kinzinger's personal experience and mine, too, of going to the border.
Well, prior to that conversation with Adam and his update for you, what were the doubts that you had?
It was
that
more
were
of a process.
Alleviated?
It was more constitutional issues, executive actions. I've never been a big fan of. I think we ought to be able to work issues through Congress, but that doesn't stop all executive actions. And I criticized President Obama on some of his executive actions. Look, DACA is a program that was an executive action. I'm trying to fix it legislatively now because the Obama administration didn't do it when they had control of the House, the Senate, and the White House. So I like the legislative process because I participate in it. But the legislative process has been bogged down by politics when it comes to border security. I voted for immigration reform, a DACA fix. I voted to make sure that no kids were separated from their parents at the border unless law enforcement suspects human trafficking or et cetera, issues like that. And at the same time, it put $25 billion into a border structure. This was one bill that I supported in July called Good Lat 2. Would have done all of these things. We got zero Democrats to vote for it, and we didn't get enough Republicans to vote for it. And it was kind of interesting. During the government shutdown, I was invited by the president and vice president and their team over to the White House for what was supposed to be a bipartisan lunch. Ended up, we Republicans were the only ones who were there. And I looked at my old colleague, Mick Mulvaney, who's now head of OMB. And I said, you know, Mick, I tried to make sure we wouldn't be in this spot by fixing our immigration system and funding a border structure with this vote. And you guys needed to do a better job of helping us get those votes. And they didn't. Because it goes back to what I've said since I got elected, Ryan. The far right and the far left, they don't want to solve this immigration problem. They don't want to solve the border problem because then it's not a campaign issue. Republicans could have solved this when we were in charge of all three branches, and Democrats clearly could have solved this problem when they had virtually a supermajority in the Senate during President Obama's first term. They didn't do it.
That's Congressman Rodney Davis, a Republican from Taylorville, in town today to read to some second graders at Irving Elementary School for Read Across America Day. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, buddy.
I'm Ryan Denham.
Davis and Kinzinger both opposed a measure that passed the House to terminate Trump's emergency declaration. It's likely to pass the Senate this month, forcing the president's first veto.